Hey everyone. I just wanted to give you a reminder that next week is our last class in this module, and we are starting at 6:30 instead of 7 o'clock, so come on early. It's our practice night. Steve asked us for our homework last week to think about something that we wanted to give as an offering as part of the last day. So I said that I would type up the homework and put it on the website, which I did, but not until last night, because I had one of those weeks where it went from like Monday to the weekend super fast. So it is kind of typed up there, like under Discovering Buddhism Materials. So there's a reminder there. If you do look there for the homework, since it was last week's homework, it's already there, that reminder. And just we'll see you at 6:30 next time, and we'll try to say that again at the end of class.
Okay, so welcome. Is anybody here besides Jennifer for the first time tonight to this class, so I know kind of what to hit and miss? Okay. Remind me, we're going to talk a little bit about practice class. We should call it something other than practice class, like, I don't know, picnic or something fun. What'd you say? Celebration class, yes. Remember to bring, did you, the offerings for the altar? We're going to do some 35 Buddha practice. You don't have to do prostrations, but if you want to, I'd suggest you bring knee pads. So what I do is I have, like, you know, volleyball knee pads or something. I have those. So that way your knees don't hurt if you're doing more than three prostrations. We do full-length prostrations. So if you want to do full-length prostrations during the 35 Buddha practice, then bring knee pads and something that helps your hands slide out, like, what are those things called for the oven? Yeah, oven mitts or socks. Socks are good. Garden gloves might stick a little bit, you know. Yeah, anything that kind of slides, that that helps. And then you can have your choice how many you want to do. If you want to do all 35 prostrations or two, or just sitting and reading the names out loud is also considered part of the practice. So you have multiple choices of what you can do, but that will be our practice in purifying karma that we've been talking about. And we actually have a tanka of all the 35 Buddhas, so it'll be really easy for us to visualize. All right, so we're going to start off by thinking about our intention again. And first we'll do this just by remembering why we came today. If we're out of curiosity, if it was to connect to other people who think like us so that we can increase and deepen our practice, so that we can have a calmer mind, more understanding about this path. You know, what is really our intention? That's really an important part of karma. So really looking at our intention and trying to expand it so that knowing that if we accomplish those goals that we set for ourselves in coming here tonight, what the effects will be on us immediately in this lifetime or in other lifetimes, if we're able to change some of the things in our mind that we would like to change. Just take a look at how that will affect you and how it will affect those around you, those people you come in contact with every day who you know and those who you don't know. The choices that you'll be able to make, the view that you'll be able to have and hold, and the behavior that you'll be able to change, all because you've reached that goal. Okay, and then we're going to say the Four Immeasurables on page 34? Oh, I got it right. Okay. 34. See, with a little practice, anything is possible. And we say these Four Immeasurables to even, it's like steroids for your intention. Just gets that intention going in the right direction. So it's on page 34, the Four Immeasurables. And this time, let's have the women say the first immeasurable, the men say the second, because we're a choir. We're the Four Immeasurable choir tonight. So women, the first Four Immeasurable. Men, the second immeasurable. I'll say the third immeasurable, then everybody will say the fourth. Okay? Got to keep tricks to keep our mind sharp. All right, so gentlemen. Oh, did I say women first? I'm sorry. See, just to keep your mind sharp. I'm messing with you. I knew that. Okay. Women. Sentient beings of happiness. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Okay. We're going to do a 5-minute meditation. This is a focus meditation, just as we have been doing, where you're going to get into your meditative posture, checking the points, and I'm going to lead you through just, you know, settling your mind, focusing on your breathing, give you 5 minutes to do that. And then I'm going to ring the bell, and I'm going to lead you through a guided meditation. So if you're sitting in the chair, make sure your back is straight, feet flat on the floor. If you're sitting on the floor, you know, the cushion is meant to help get your rear end higher than your knees so that your back is going to be more naturally aligned, to be straight like coins stacked one on top of the other. That's the most important part of the whole posture. And then you place your left hand just below your navel, your right hand gently on top, your thumbs just barely touching as though you're holding a little piece of paper there, your elbows out away from your body so that your lungs have plenty of room to take nice deep breaths. Tuck your chin just a little bit so that it raises the back of your head instead of breaking that spinal straightness that we were just talking about. So you tuck your chin a little bit. Close your eyes or leave them gently open so that light can come in, if that helps, to keep you alert. Put your tongue at the back of your teeth. Your jaw then relaxes. This is also said to prevent you from drooling, so we'll see. And now just let all of your awareness come to your breath, the sensation of breathing in and out. Put all your awareness on the air coming in and out of your nostrils or your abdomen rising and falling. And to tie your mind to that, you start to count your breaths. One inhale, one exhale. Two inhale, two exhale, going up to 5 and then starting over, going up to 10 and then starting over. The point is to keep your mind as sharp and alert as if there were a snake in the room, but without the fear that goes with that. And every time your mind tries to pull away to something you did do or should do or will do, just gently bring it back. Like a precious child, bring it back to the task of sharpening its focus onto one thing, the breath, which actually gives your mind a chance to relax. Gives your mind a chance to relax from all of the stuff it's chasing all day, and at the same time a chance to focus on one thing. And if you're able, especially at home when you're practicing this, get to the part where you will see thoughts start to arise. And if you notice that, here comes a thought. As soon as you have that awareness, it might start settling down again like a wave on an ocean before the next one rises up. And the point is to rest and expand that space between thoughts as much as you can in that space of focus. You know, keeping your eyes closed and your mind sharp. Bring your awareness to one place that you know really well. Pick a place that you've seen change over time. Could be your house, place it of work, in your neighborhood, a building, a room, some place that you know pretty well. And take a look at it right now in your mind's eye. Take a walk around it. How does it look in its current state? Notice the colors, the sounds. Who's there? All of the details from the bottom up. Turn all the way around and get a really good view. And then go back in time a couple of notches to when it looked a little bit different. So just back a few steps, and what did it look like then? You know, what was the environment like around it, inside of it, the people who were there, the decorations, sounds? What was it like then? And then take it back a little bit further. And again, go and take a look at all of the details that you can see, all of the ways it was at that point in time. In your place in it. And then go back to the first time you remember seeing this place. And your impressions, your feelings. From top to bottom, what did that place look like when you first encountered it? And then in your mind's eye, try to go back a couple of notches to before you were even there. What might it have looked like? Do you know? Can you take a guess at what it might have looked like before you encountered it? And rewind that a little bit more in time. And take another step back in time. Could be even before you were born. What did that, if that place didn't exist, what did the place that it stood on look like? What was the environment like? What might it have been like? Who was there? What were the sights and sounds and smells like then? And keep going back in time as far as you'd like. Keep unwinding that timeline and following that spot on the planet and see what that environment looked like throughout time. And now come back to the present moment in that space. Come back to the way the place looks like right now. And go forward in time a couple of notches and imagine what it might look like, moving into the future a little bit. Just a few steps into the future, what might this space look like? And go a few more steps into the future. Who might be there? What might it look like? How might you might be relating to that space and to the future? And go as far forward as you care to go into the future, looking at how this space might change accordingly. And then come back to the present moment with it. And when you're ready, just open your eyes. All right, so what I'd like you to do is we're going to get into your groups. And if you haven't been here before or if you want to get in a different group, that's fine. Just make sure the groups are relatively even so you have enough time to go around. What I'd like you to do is talk about how this meditation that you just did might relate to the discussion we've been having on karma. How does this meditation relate to karma? And then if you have time to finish that, last week we were talking about taking an issue or an object or something that had come up and thinking about what different tools we could use. So all the four different people who are going to be in the cell leaders, Mickey, Tristan, Aaron, and Kevin. Kevin, raise your hands. They'll help you with that discussion. So if you have time to finish that first round, then you could take something from this week and figure out what tool is the best tool to use to apply that. Because we're trying to expand the ways that we can look at something difficult. So we're trying to look at something that's challenging us and figuring out which tool that we're studying, which Buddha Dharma tool helps us to expand our awareness about it, help our mind stay forward moving towards liberation, okay? So you have about 10, 15 minutes to do that, and then we'll come back to the group. And if you're at home, same thing, just write it down. All right, well, thank you for letting me send you off to groups and then let me interrupt you and bring you back. We got one little group, and there we go. So Aaron's going to help me by any questions that come up from these discussions or anything tonight that I don't have an answer for, I'm going to get from Geshe-la before the practice class. And also, there may be things that you might want to go into deeper based on, you know, this is just a little introduction to karma. So then I would be happy to set up an appointment for you to meet with Geshe-la. So that's also what this kind of is, just the springboard for a lot more information that somebody more qualified can present. So what were some of the ideas about how that meditation related to karma? Hold on. Oh, yeah. Tristan.
Well, I guess I was just thinking about how, you know, when you think about a place or an object that you have an experience with and you trace it back in time and before you had that, well, I guess with objects it wouldn't count or it wouldn't work, but with an environment, and you think about time and before you got to experience what it was, before you, whoever experienced it before you, before them, and then into the future. And I was thinking about with karma, just kind of relating that changing, constant changing nature of universe, everything constantly changing, mm-hmm. to the impermanence thing in Buddhism, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. it was really resonating with the impermanence that right. word is found in Buddhism, and hearing about it, it makes me think about, I guess, that and mm-hmm. karma relating to impermanence kind of is, I feel like they go hand in hand, kind of karma and impermanence, but yeah. I guess that sounds really hard to grasp, but when I think of the impermanence and karma going hand in hand, it's kind of like if something was permanent and someone or something or some culture or whatever got to, you know, grasp that, or not grasp it, but if they got to reap the fruits of that one, like if there's a tree mm-hmm. and there was a monkey tribe and they were all monkeys and they could, you know, live under the tree and eat the mangoes, and if they lived there forever, it wouldn't really, like eventually some other, you know,
right.
generation or something would take its place and move along. So it's not really, you know, you can relate that monkey tree metaphor to any kind of environment, whether mm-hmm. it's a building you grew up in or a townhome that used to be some mm-hmm. woods that you built some forts in, or
right.
the roads, how they used to be way cooler and now they're all dirty and gross or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's what I was thinking about.
Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah.
Our group kind of all related it for the most part to a physical place that they had been probably mm-hmm. special to them as younger, and how it changed going through and how it likely looked before.
Mm-hmm.
But it came back from a karma relation perspective of it's what each one of us is making it all mean.
Mm-hmm.
When I started lamenting about where I live now, is about to have 7-story buildings
mm-hmm.
put in it. But one of the fellows in the group mentioned that from a person, our own continuum perspective,
right.
to a 5-year-old kid, he's going to have a great experience if they put an ice cream shop
mm-hmm.
on a bottom floor of one of those buildings.
Mm-hmm.
While I'm making it mean mm-hmm. 7 floors of ugly.
Right.
So there's this sort of weaving that goes on between the physical aspects that change.
Sure.
But what really is that change besides what we're making that change mean?
Mm-hmm.
It isn't coming itself. It's just it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
We're making it mean something.
Well, and I mean, you can affect it, and you might have already affected it. And, you know, we've talked a lot about, or I use the metaphor of a river a lot. So you are a river of consciousness, and at this point in the river it's labeled whatever your name is, right? And to me, this kind of exercise gives you that bigger bird's eye view of the continuum of whatever it is, that space that you were meditating on, but that all of those things have this continuum, and that one of the things that kind of trips us up with karma so much is it can feel so heavy and so loaded and so punishing, when in fact in a meditation like this you can see just all the things that kind of line up to tumble into this thing that we've called a river. And it's not this static one thing. So to help us remember that karma, the whole idea of karma, this impermanence that we're looking at in this kind of exercise, is meant to empower us so that it doesn't just have to flow. We can create what we want to create in that river to some degree, certainly our relationship to it, or we're going to have an awful relationship to something, or if we're going to try to petition City Hall not to make it 7 stories, you know, whatever, we have lots of choices, and we start to look at that whole bigger picture of it. So I have a friend who grew up, she's German, she grew up in Germany, we were talking about history, and she said, oh, you have no idea, your country's only so young. She goes, but when you grow up in Germany and you've inherited this really difficult history, you realize how long it will take to move away from that history and to create some other causes, so that there's more when you hear the word Germany than what she's carrying, you know? And that really hit me about how you know, yes, with time, then that gets bigger. You get further away from that event. You have more opportunities to put more things in the river. Just like, this is one of the reasons, well, we won't get into politics, but you could look at what Germany's stance they took on recent immigrants as maybe a result of like, oh, I want to put something else in this river now. Okay? So it empowers you to make the choice, since you're at the river right now. What am I going to do at this point? Any other things about that exercise in particular? I thought I heard some questions going on.
We touched on several of those same concepts about time sliding back and forth, stream of consciousness, and you know, only seeing part of the river, and there's actually more to that stream. And some other people had mentioned that it's like a construction site. They envision a construction site. They go by every day, and they see incremental change, and they see just change in the present and potential future changes, and you know, realizing that action is karma and change. Mm-hmm. People have mentioned about looking at their present work and how, you know, being in this, physically in this spot, that you could have been here before, you know, Civil War, through in the kind of the concept of this environmental karma. I've been here before, you know, I probably will be here again.
Right.
And then basically we're in certain places because of karma and making decisions.
And just like we were using a physical environment, you can also use an idea, say an idea that you have, an opinion that you hold, and do the same thing. Go back and look at how that opinion, you can't really find the beginning of that opinion that you might have. You can just look at different forms of it all the way back to when the earliest time you can remember. And what that's helping us do is look at how everything that we experience has a preceding moment, right? And so what are the things that you want to experience? Well, they'll also have a preceding moment that you do have some control over. So if what you're hoping for is a calmer mind, a better mind, an enlightened mind, you're the one who will create those immediate causes right before that. And that, again, is the whole point of studying karma. Yeah. Nikki.
One thing that I was thinking of how what came before me being there was part of what allowed me to be there. Mm. And that, I mean, in relation to karma, was that same thing. What in the past is allowing this present experience?
Right, right. Yeah. Any ideas?
I mean, I know what was before. And,
yeah.
And,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody else have their hand up? Yeah. I thought there were two. Oh, okay.
I came late, so I was just trying to focus on my breath instead of going where you want talking about. So I think I just went into my own mind. Mm-hmm. I thought that would be a good place to start. And just seeing from my previous perceptions to have a break, how I can come out of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think just being to be financially independent itself becomes when you're not financially independent, and then you have to become financially independent. I think that is a big breakthrough people have to go through. So I think somehow my mind had to just push all these my perceptions to come out of it.
Yeah.
That my own limitations I put on my mind.
Well, there's a whole part in this, if any of you have been reading this book, there's a part in this book where they talk about changing behavior and changing view. I think that's on just page 34. So the whole point of spiritual practice is to change those two things, because we know that our behavior, our actions, right, is what karma is. Action is creating these seeds, these imprints on our river of consciousness that ripens in one way or another at some point, And so changing our behavior is dependent on changing our view. So that's why we do meditation, both focus meditation and analytical meditation. That's why we study the things we study, is to expand our view so that we have more choices in our behavior, so that we're creating the seeds that we want to create. Aaron, I thought I heard you all talking about a question about, you want to relate what you were, because I think it's an interesting, about the center and how the causes and conditions, I think it's an interesting question. So if people haven't brought this up yet, I'm happy to have this discussion.
Well, I was just confused because sometimes when I think about conventional steps to make something happen, it makes me more confused. So if I say, you know, what was this land before this, and go back and back, but it almost seems like, okay, so how did this get here? Well, people were meeting in the basement, and they said we need a better space, and they raised some money, and then, you know, we came and we did some physical labor, and Patrick made some cabinets, but that's not why it's here.
Right.
So thinking about those things too much actually confuses me more.
Okay.
The conventional stuff.
I love to be confused. I love that kind of dilemma. Like, you're just watching kind of the shell at that. You know, it's this kind of game of, like, watching, like, somebody was driving by the building site, right, and seeing it change every day. You're seeing the manifestation. You're seeing the physical manifestation of something ripening. So, and we can just get locked into thinking that's it. It's so solid like that. But we know it's not really solid because, we just take things back and you can't find the beginning of them. So yes, something had to, this is a good segue into this next part, something had to, even if you don't have the karma for something, but you have all those materials, it's still going to fall apart, like I heard you saying, like, you know, so people could have raised the money, it still couldn't have happened. There's plenty of FPMT centers that tried and didn't make it. There's plenty of them that have these issues or those issues, and we've got our issues. How come? There's plenty of things that look like it should all come together and do or don't. What makes that difference? You know? So, and that's the kind of the more invisible part that you can't see. And that's actually one of the really good, you know, when people are trying to convince themselves of cause and effect, that's one of the ways that you meditate on it. That things don't just arise out of nothing. So that we're creating tendencies all the time. So if you see a little child who at 3 years old is interested in the piano and already being able to pick the piano up really easily, they haven't even practiced that much. Where did that come from? Versus another child who is really struggling to speak at that same age as this other child is playing the piano. What's going on there? You know, so different thing. That's one way that people start to look at it. But so these are the way karma ripens. You can divide it into four categories. The first one is called like the fully ripened karma, which is like basically the way that we take rebirth, whatever form that is, animal rebirth, human rebirth, all the different realms, which we're going to go into later. That's a fully ripened karmic event. Just look down. You got it. Another one is an action similar to the cause. So again, if you... Rabina uses this example all the time. So somebody would ask her, how come you play the piano so well? You know, well, I have practiced the piano for 5 years. I was interested in the piano. I have a kind of a natural talent for the piano. I practiced it every day for 5 years, and that's why. It's no big surprise, right? That's an action similar to the cause. Her act of playing the piano is ripening. That karma is ripening in her interest, her ability, her natural tendency to play the piano. Likewise, she said, people ask her, how come you're so angry? She goes, well, I've practiced anger. You know, I've practiced it for countless lifetimes. I came into this lifetime a little angrier than other kids in her family. I'm quoting her. She said, but, you know, I could say it's because of my father. She goes, I'm happy to take credit for the good things. Oh, yes, I have a natural tendency to play the piano. I practice hard. I work hard at it. That's why I play the piano. I kind of want to move away from those negative things. Why are you so angry? Oh, it's my dad. It's his fault, right? But instead of looking at it more like the piano, like, I must have practiced this. I came into this life with a lot more anger than other people. I must have practiced this from past lifetimes. It's not meant as blame. You're the one using it. This is when you have to figure out how to use that tool correctly. You don't take a scalpel and stab yourself. That's what would be the equivalent of blaming yourself about karma. It's more like, okay, now I can see that I have this tendency. What do I do to fix it? Other people are going to have their own. You know, as Rubina says, keep your mind out of their business. Look at your own movie and go, okay, this is, I'm very familiar with this. I have, you know how many lifetimes we have? Just eons and eons of time to develop this habit. But now I also have the karma to be able to look at it differently, to be able to really explore it, not just blame other people, but to really try now to put something in my mind stream to change this, to eradicate it, to fix this, to liberate myself from this tendency of anger or depression or whatever it is. It's going to be something. It's going to be something. As I think I told you the story about this woman who said, we're all here for a reason. Did I tell you that story about my mom? No, okay. So I placed my mom in this assisted living facility years ago, and these older women took her under, they weren't older, they were all the same age, but my mom was having more difficulties, and they kind of took her under their wing, and they helped feed her, and I told this nurse, oh, they are so kind to her, they're so nice. And she said, well, everybody here in this facility, they're all here for a reason. And the people who know they're here, they're kinder to the other people. And I just was like having a mind-blowing experience. Like, is she like, am I awake? It felt like pure Dharma to me. Like, we are all here because we're not enlightened. You know, at least as far as I can tell, I know I'm not. And so I don't know about you all, but we're all of us who are here and not enlightened, we're here for a reason. And those of us who know it, we can turn and be kinder to ourselves and to others because we know we're all in the same boat. Does that make sense? I mean, I just thought it was such a nice analogy when this nurse said this to me out of the blue. We're all here for a reason. And those of us who know it turn around and they're nicer. All right, so if you practice niceness like that, then that will become a habit that will follow your mind stream on into the future. An experience similar to the cause. So there's lots of examples of this. This is kind of a dramatic one, but I was watching this. I told you before, I love these shows of like Locked Up Abroad, I Shouldn't Be Alive, all these things like that. It was one of those shows where this guy was a trapper. Like he had this like four-wheel kind of thing. What do you call those things? You know, your four-wheel terrain thing. You know, he's out there. He packs up all this stuff and he goes out and he traps animals and then he goes back and then he goes back and picks them up. And so he'd been doing this for a while, and one day he went out there, and he didn't tell anybody where he was going. You can see it already set up, right? And the whole thing flips over on him, the four-wheel thing flips over on him. He's trapped under it. He can't reach the incredible stash of food that he has or his phone or anything else. He can see a house, but nobody can hear him. And he's out there. He's going to die, and he's trapped just like the animals he's trapped. Now this happened in this lifetime, right? But it's an action similar to the cause. That's a very dramatic one. He is now trapped just the way he's trapped other beings, you know. But we can see other ones. So I think Geshe-la had said something like, you know, if you lied a lot in your past lifetimes, whatever, now in this lifetime people are always lying to you. This is also something that's similar to an action, an experience similar to the cause. So this is why, again, then you're trying to practice the 10 virtuous actions. You're trying to remember what the 10 non-virtuous ones are and flip them and try to do as often as possible the 10 virtuous actions. Which we got to remember those because next week we're going to talk about them. Okay, and then the fourth one, I've heard two different things, but I kind of see how they're related, is the environmental. And these are kind of almost like you can look at it in one way as collective karma. So where you're born, the environment that you experience, it's more of an environmental karma. But Geshe-la was just telling me the way that his translation of that one is more to do with your experience of whether something is good or bad. So I think that's also how you experience the environment, whether you personally experience the environment as something positive or negative. But we'll just label it right now environment, and you're going to get that. So getting back to Aaron's question then, Yeah, you know, we were in that basement forever, and there was just a handful of us, and even when we were trying to get a bigger space, some people were, we were really divided. Some people felt like we had to raise all the money first and make sure we had a plan. But it was, there's so few of us. It was like, how are we going to do that? You know? And others of us who thought, if we just move forward, things will start to happen. You know, if you create a bigger space, there'll be more people, and then we'll be able to fund more things. And so it took us a long time to take a step forward. And, you know, if we, you know, if we didn't have, if we hadn't created the causes for it to happen, I think no matter what, even if we had raised, even hit the lottery, it still wouldn't have come off. We would have bought the building and nobody would have come, or Geshe wouldn't, would have left, or something would have happened. And so sometimes you want to wait and see things unfold, and sometimes you have to move and watch them unfold. Does that help any with that question that you were, you all were talking about? Okay. Yeah, you want to share those? Because this, I'm surprised it hasn't come up earlier.
One of the things we talked about was how we, a lot of us had this environmental sort of picture in our minds. And this, you know, for myself and I think others, it sounded like there was this eons of before me, and eons after me, and that the it doesn't really matter in a lot of ways. There is this projection that we put on things, like I was thinking about the place that I was, the environment, well, maybe there was love in it, and it's just this projection that I was trying to interpret and make up the story for it, like we do about every single thing that we come in contact with, and how it really doesn't mean anything. And I suddenly was hit with renunciation that it just doesn't matter. It's just sort of this emptiness that, that, just isn't anything in a way worth grasping, I guess, or I don't know.
Okay.
But, and then the other thing, I had a question in a way for you was, you talked about we're all a river, it's kind of the concept of we're all a river. Is there this concept of all a river, everyone is this river, and as far as the center, all of these rivers came together, and the environment, this physical location, has its own particular river of karma as well. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm, I think I understand your question. Yeah, nothing is static, nothing is, everything is constantly in flux, and everything, you can see a cause and condition and things coming together to ripen into this building which won't last forever. And you're, what I mean by a river, you're, each of our consciousness is also its own river. And these things, all of these came together. Tonight we can label this Discovering Buddhism, and then it's all going to go apart, and then maybe come back again next Monday. We can also call it Discovering Buddhism. And is that kind of getting at what your question is? Okay. So, right. Yes, there's this, and we must have done something in our past lives to create the causes to be able to study Buddhism. We just picked this one thing, to study Buddhism in this life, and to have, to be living in a city that has a center, that has a Geshe. So Jennifer, everybody here, she's sitting here down here, she's from Ohio, and she's been leading a study group in Youngstown, Ohio, came to Charlotte to visit a friend, a wedding, and took a bus here because she knew there was an FPMT center here. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing. And so she, you know, she's interested, she studies Discovering Buddhism on her own with some other people in Youngstown in her living room. So, you know, we, this is something we kind of are pretty familiar with and just come, you know, but it's not such a common occurrence. And that's one of the meditations I do all the time, is how amazing it is that I'm human, that I have all my faculties, that I have this kind of life where I can read and think about these things, and that there's a center here and a Geshe here. That's not an accident. So somehow we created the causes for that to ripen in this lifetime. And as has Jennifer. You know, and the karma that she's creating to bring Buddhism to her environment where she is now and people into her home to spread this around, huge. So that's also why we, if we want to be able to find it in the future, what do we do now to create the causes for us to continue to study this in the future? That's why I think the FPMT is called the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition. So what can we do to build it in our mind streams now and preserve it for our future lives? I don't know if I answered any of your question at all. But the thing that you were saying before, I wanted to get back to, like, I'm not sure what you mean when you say, like, nothing really matters. That doesn't sound so good. I would say everything matters.
What I'm referring to is the concept of emptiness, and I am obviously not good at expressing it.
Okay, so that's coming up next module, everybody. I'm making a plug for that. Karma and emptiness totally relate, because if karma, if you're realizing that every single thing I do, think, say, it plants a seed, then emptiness isn't saying that it doesn't. Emptiness is kind of giving you even another further dimension of that, of just how, you know, understanding karma helps you understand emptiness and vice versa. That you really are the creator of your next moment. You really are the creator of your next moment of happiness or not happiness, but that's what karma and emptiness are meant to help us learn. And yes, what you start to see is like, okay, so it's not fixed. I can look at this as this way or this way. But you want to make sure you're not falling into looking at it as it doesn't exist at all. You know, there is happiness, and there we do exist. And so I have the power. Am I projecting all of this stuff onto it? What's the benefit of looking at it in this way? What's the benefit of looking at it this way? I don't want to just delude myself. I want to try to be as wise as possible about this situation that I'm in, so I can make the best choices, so that I can act in the best way. So remember view and behavior. So when you're studying anything in spiritual practice, but certainly karma, we're looking at our view, which will affect our behavior, which affects the seeds that we're creating, the karma that we're creating. If we can change our view, widen our view, we have more ways of behaving with our body, speech, and mind that will impact how those seeds ripen in the future, what seeds we're creating, and how we're going to experience that. Yeah.
I think what can help me get more clear, and Scott reminded me that in the readings it was there's things about emptiness and karma together. So to say that we raise money so the center's here, and then just to think about, is that true? Well, is it possible that is the direct cause of being here? Well, no, because you can raise money and it not be here. Mm-hmm. You could, well, how did that money get there? So not thinking about it in like direct linear fashion, mm-hmm. you can still think about how this one thing was one of the contributing factors. And we talked a lot about interconnection and all of that kind of stuff too in our group. So just kind of trying to see it that and understand that there are a lot of hidden causes as well that we couldn't.
But all those things that you're talking about are just the manifestation of the karma.
Right.
So the money that was raised, the building that this, the Patrick could build this, these are all the manifestations of the seeds that were then ripening or not ripening.
That's really helpful.
Yeah. So those things are real. Those
right.
things are necessary. The karma has to ripen so the money can be, because you have to sign a paper and buy the building mm-hmm. and get the material. But all that's kind of riding on top of those karmic seeds. That helps.
That does help a lot. Because it's not that those things didn't happen.
Right.
It's just that they're not independent.
Right. They don't exist in a vacuum. And so remember that I told you about that movie, Touching the Void, where that man fell off the mountain, broke his leg, and Geshe-la said, I mean, every single thing should have killed this guy. And he didn't. And Geshe-la said, yeah, he didn't have the karma to die that day, you know, those days. So if that karma to die was not ripening, there's nothing then that was going to kill him, you know. And likewise, if his karma to die was ripening, then nothing would have saved him. I remember watching this thing on YouTube where this poor elephant in the zoo had almost gotten electrocuted with some wire, and all these people did all this stuff to save her, and she was saved, and then she fell into something and died. You know, it was like, there's certain that to me that was a perfect example of the opposite of that karma had ripened to die. So then the point I want to make sure that we also look at is when do you use what tool? When do these things help and when do they hurt? You know, and you probably can figure that out, but that's one of the things to really think about and to know that all of these things are more tools in your tool bag. And if anybody has a situation they want to raise so that we can look at what tools to use, I'm happy to do this. Yeah. Anybody got a...
So I was thinking about today, I have a person who I work with who's really hard for me to deal with. And I've dealt with her unskillfully before. And that's already ripened into making the situation worse. In fact, one of the readings addressed it directly. I forget which one. Okay. Where, you know, you try to confront someone and you make yourself feel better by telling them about themselves, and then afterwards you feel better for a minute, and then something else happens and you feel worse, and now that person's upset and you've created all, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that happened. And now I'm just trying to figure out, it's a person who I have such an aversion to that when they walk in the room or when I pass them, it makes me feel all, you know, all this anxiety and, you know, right, negative thinking and everything. And I was thinking of the doors and the messages and, you know, to pass and, you know, through them and wish well and, you know, wishing the prayer wheels and everything. Today, every time I saw her, even if it didn't stop me from having kind of aversive feelings, every time I saw her, I thought, I wish her well. I wish her well. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure I believed it at mm-hmm. first, mm-hmm. but I just did it. Every time something that would remind me of her, or I'd pass her, or I'd see her and she'd give me a sour face, I would just think, I wish her well. I wish her well. Mm-hmm. And it really started, like you said before, I don't know, it just started planting seeds of, like, some positivity.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt it helping a little.
That's awesome.
And it maybe also influenced my behavior towards her in other ways, like just talking to her and having interactions. And mm-hmm. who knows if she felt that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly kept me from doing what I did before.
There you go. There you go.
And I would love any more advice on how to deal with that situation skillfully.
Okay. So one of the ways I think that karma can help us in a situation like this is even selfishly to know, I don't want to keep doing this for lifetimes on into the future. I don't want to keep meeting this person in this way. Right? So even if it just comes from this kind of, quote, selfish or your own self-interest in the beginning, that's fine. That's enough to start getting started. Like, okay, what can I do to just change the way I'm looking at this so I'm not planting more seeds to continue this on and on and on? And likewise, if I went back in the river a little bit, who knows, maybe it was reversed before and now I'm experiencing this side of it. So I really want to cut this continuation of this. So it gives you a little bit more oomph for your struggle there. And have you ever done the meditation on friend, stranger, and enemy? Like looking at this person, if you didn't know her, how you would feel? If what would she do? Like in just some, what could she possibly do to make this completely different? Like if she started treating you X, Y, and Z, then she would be a friend. And so you just start to see the fluidity of even that relationship. And you know, it sounds like you're already doing an amazing job just starting to change the habit of thinking. Now, it doesn't mean that her behavior is going to change, but if your behavior changes, you'll be happier every time you pass her, right?
Right.
Anybody else have any suggestions for Tristan? And then, yeah. It's on. Yeah. No, well.
Oh, sorry. So this is cool because it's kind of similar to what she was saying, and yeah. That was... it's going to lead into another thing. I tend to talk and make hyperlinks into other subjects like that. But I guess I also have a coworker that is kind of hard to deal with sometimes. And I guess really in dealing with him, other situations, I've realized that it's really easy to tell yourself, what can I do? Or like, I guess classifying karma into actions and reactions. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's easy to do good karma if I'm, like, starting from zero, I'm doing it. But it's hard to have good karma if someone's, like, telling you something and then you have to react to it and then you forget everything you know. And then you're just, you react to it. So it's, like, you have to develop the good habit of treating others nicely from the get-go, mm-hmm. but then also acting right when you're treated wrong.
Right. Yeah. And it's so hard to know, you know, I mean, this is why wisdom and compassion. So, okay, she wanted.
Sorry. Yeah.
But while you're passing the mic, one of the things that both of you said that I just want to comment on is I've seen Geshe-la do this when things are challenging. Is so you just said, you know, you tell yourself, may she be happy. That's a powerful mantra to say to counteract the other things that are going on in your mind. So Geshe-la might say, you know, Om Mani Padme Hum. But you could also say, may all beings be happy, or may she be happy, or I know she wants to be happy. You know, that's what we have in common. Even if she and I are going about it the wrong way, that's what we have in common. You know, but it doesn't mean, and this is important, that you don't just throw out protecting yourself or doing things that you have to do to change certain things, but certainly catching something before it leaves your mouth is a really good start. But, you know, lots of times we still have to take action sometimes. You know, that some people might have done something wrong and now you have to do whatever you need to do to take the next step. But we can do it with a certain mindset. Yeah.
Based on that premise that mm-hmm. it's in the board, mm-hmm. any situation, any moment that you experience is the product of karma ripening. Mm-hmm. So what really helps me is that in a difficult situation, obviously, if this is the ripening effect of my karma, I'm burning, you know.
Yeah.
I'm burning some. So, that makes me feel actually willing to experience, mm-hmm. you know, anger, because it's not really the other person. It's what you experience mm-hmm. because of the actions or saying or thoughts of others in your environment.
Right.
What that awakens in you or
right.
what reactions you get, and so that. For me, that premise there is really, it just gives me a lot of energy to say, oh yes, I'm going to get done with this one, and you right. know, I can choose to actually get more upset or just
right.
you know, try to do it in a different way, like
right.
you're doing.
That's the whole point, is to feel, you know, when we're looking at karma positive with the right mindset, then it is that feeling of like almost excitement or like, oh good, I'm weeding a garden. I've just pulled out a whole bunch of weeds and now I'm going to put in some more seeds, rather than, oh my God, how come I have so many weeds? You know? Yeah. Go ahead. I'll repeat it.
I have a question there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. They say you have to be a good protector. You have
right.
to protect the karma. And I don't know what they really mean. I mean, I'm wondering if that's what they mean.
Well, so the question was, what does it mean when Lama Zopa said you have to be a good protector of karma? You protect karma. Well, you know, so you have an incredible, you've hit the mother lode. I think that's probably what it means. You have an incredible wealth of positive karma because of all the conditions in your life right now. You need to protect that and use it in the best way possible. At the same time, we're all endowed with this incredible ability right now to weed that garden that is our mind. And in lots of other situations, we wouldn't be able to have such an ability to do that. We'd only be potentially creating, if I was born a tiger, I'd be creating a whole lot of negative karma a lot of the time. Because I'd be out killing every single minute, right? So you have this incredible karmic lottery ticket that you hit. Okay. Does somebody else have? Yeah.
I think sometimes one of the things I've learned is that when I'm reacting to an individual, I'm learning to realize that it's not that person that I'm reacting to, that I have habit energy and patterns from my past
yeah.
that I carry and feelings that don't have anything to do with that person, but it's been triggered by that person.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
if I can step back yeah. and go, oh, when did this happen before?
Mm-hmm.
And how old was I? And did I feel powerless? Or mm-hmm. was I in a situation where I could use positive tools?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not about that person, and it's really not about me either.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a way of being kind to ourselves, you know. I mean, we've all survived a lot of difficult things. And so sometimes when something is difficult to us, we can look and see, when are the other times that, of course I would feel this way because of these things. And I can just be more forgiving for the feelings that I'm having, rather than sometimes I think we, at least I know I have, kind of misused some of the teachings to just try not to feel certain things. But it's okay to feel those things and look at them and explore them, so again that my view is expanded and I have more choices in how I'm going to move forward.
I think what's helped me in those situations is if you can cultivate a positive mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So when negative karma ripens and you see the weed, don't feed the weed.
Yeah, right.
Actually, and it's not bad to recognize that, and you feel it welling up, but don't give into that. And
yeah, right, right. And to know when you're cutting a cycle of something. Yeah.
I have a question, and I'm going to get political.
Okay.
So in my life, I have a rabid Democrat and a rabid Republican, and they have both spewed their stuff on me. And I...
Look at you.
I know. I'm just... And, you know, and I try to... tell me how... What do you think I should... because it's... I had... both of them yelling at me, and I didn't feel like I did anything to
yeah.
get it going, but, you know, he's going to ruin the world, and, oh, he's the best thing since sliced bread on the other side, and...
Are they trying to, like, convince you and pull you into their
oh,
view?
Oh, of course. They want
okay,
me to
so
win over. They want to win me over to their side, of course. It's
yeah.
all political, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But... I just say he deserves a chance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he's going to do the best that he possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
But and you know, there's
yeah.
help.
Well, I don't know exactly. I mean, it probably the same thing everybody's been saying would apply to that situation. It was just be curious to me if I were you, like why am I the target of people, you know, it seems like people want you in their camp. So if there's a way to like play jujitsu so you're not, you know, being pulled in, you know, you have your own camp. You know. You know, it's probably everybody's going through something similar in one way or another. We're around a lot of, you know, I work as a mediator, and one of the foundational principles of mediation is helping parties look at what is objective criterion that they can use to help them make a decision. All of a sudden, objective criteria is like, it doesn't exist. You know, we're looking at our leaders who can't agree on criterion or her calling it different things. So it trickles down, I feel like, to everything. You know, it's very hard to mediate when the environment is so explosive and when people question everything, whether something is true or not. So I guess your question really is, how do you keep a calm mind in the face of people trying to pull you over? So let's just, it doesn't have to be political, it could be anything.
And maybe try to figure out a way to say something where they hopefully could say, well, maybe there is another side of this.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be good that they could open their mind a little bit?
Right. Okay, so then that's what you want to do, is you want them to open their mind. Yeah, so then you've got, that's where you're getting hooked, you know. So if you want to just, you know, get out of that, there's a way to do that. If, you know, I was listening, this is before the most recent election stuff. I was listening to this too, but still people were trying to figure out civil discourse. And there was this Republican and Democrat, pretty conservative in both of their parties, who had written a book together about how to have a conversation. What they had found is when they decided at one point, they didn't know each other, I mean, but they came to know each other. what they decided to do was that each would take a turn and just listen. And just listen to make sure that they really understood what the other person was saying without trying to, like, change their view at all. Just tell me, let's take it off of politics, but say it's about why somebody likes cats and why somebody likes dogs. So I'm a cat person, just tell me everything you love about dogs. And instead of me sitting there thinking about how I can get you to like cats, I'm just going to see if, did I hear everything? Is this why you like dogs? Now that person feels so heard, so received, because I'm not trying to get them to like cats, and then vice versa. Now we switch it. If people really do that, and that's what I try all day long in my office to help people do, is, did you really hear what this person said? Because you're going to get a chance to talk about dogs, you know. And then if people want to be heard, people really want to be heard. It's really, really hard right now because the stakes are really high, and, you know, if you want to just get out of being in the middle, there's lots of ways to do that. And letting them know that you care about both of them and, you know, yeah. And please don't do this anymore in my presence. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of people trying to figure out this thing of how to talk. Yeah. Yeah.
You had mentioned that after the fact, you can kind of figure out if the karma was there or not, depending on the results. So you can put in a lot of effort, and the materials are there, but it doesn't come to fruition. Is there any way to know earlier, not after the fact, are there any ways to know? And my specific situation is that I feel very called to FPMT, and I feel very happy to be here, and you have no idea, just being here tonight, the structure, the wisdom, and everything about this, it's the structure that I feel like I'm sitting in, and back at home, I don't have the same support and resources, and it's literally like night and day for me. So, on one hand, I feel I may have the karma possibly to move closer to a real center, and, you know, but I also feel like I'm abandoning my hometown and the people that I'm organizing in my hometown. So I don't know.
I'm so glad you asked that question because it reminded me of something I wanted to say. So you might not be able to predict how it's going to ripen, but what you can do is feel fully confident and joyful in what you are creating. So there's this story I read about this Chinese monk who had to escape China during the Cultural Revolution. You know, he had been involved in a small monastery there. He had to escape with his life to the United States. Then fast forward many years towards the end of his life, he could go back to China without risk of being imprisoned or killed. So he went back to visit, and he was trying to rebuild this small monastery, and his friends and family there were saying to him, don't be ridiculous. The government's just going to tear this down. And he said, well, then let them do that, but I want to create the karma to build. Who cares if they tear it down or not? I've created the karma to build that monastery. And that, even if it doesn't ripen right in that life, what a powerful thing. So likewise, you are creating incredible karmic seeds, more than us who just turn around and walk in the building. You came all the way from Ohio here, and then you're going to go back and keep helping people there when you are there. And even if, say, you moved here, you can still help people back, you know. So I would go to New Orleans like once a year and bring different teachers there. And it's a really good example because I was trying to start a small center there. And then Katrina hit and all those people had to move. I would never have been able to predict that, but that was kind of in the karmic package there. But it doesn't do away with the fact that I helped bring all of that. And actually, all these people got in touch with me and said that the meditations that we did on impermanence helped them enormously after Katrina because they were spread out throughout the whole country and in all these difficult situations. So you never know how it's going to help or how it's going to ripen, but just keep focusing on you have this opportunity to build, you know, in whatever it is for any of us in any situation. We don't know how it's going to ripen, but we can have faith that it will ripen some way as long as our intention is very positive about it. And focusing on our you know, the three mental
virtues that we talk, those are really tricky. Some of the other ones we can be more careful about. Okay, I'm not stealing. I didn't steal anything. I'm not lying. But some of the mental ones, you know, like, oh, I'm going to look like a really good practitioner, you know, that can slip in even when we think we're not doing anything like that, you know. So we have to be really careful with our minds and our looking at our intention all the time. So does somebody else have a burning question? So we were supposed to cover something else. I'm just going to ask Brian to show it because we'll get to it next week. But I found this link that is, I'll give it to you all because it talks about the Wheel of Life and it's an interactive link. So you can hover with your cursor on each of the parts and it'll bring up and describe what each of these symbols are. And, you know, like, you know, in churches, the stained glass windows were designed to help people understand the Bible, people who couldn't read, you know, these were stories in the windows. And same thing with the Tonkas, and same thing, this is the Wheel of Life that is typically outside the Gompa in Tibetan communities. So it's a really important teaching tool. And there's like several different circles. So the inner circle is the three roots of evil. And then there's a little circle outside of that. And then there's these bigger segments which show the realms. And then there's a circle around that. And then even when you place the cursor way up at the top on the Buddha or the Bodhisattva, there's descriptions about there. So it's pretty cool. So what's the address?
BuddhaNet.net/wheel2.
Okay. If you type into Google Wheel of Life BuddhaNet, you should be able to get this. Oh. Can you put it there? It's on the website?
You put it where you post the teaching?
Where it's in comments on live chat.
It's in comments on live chat on YouTube. I will also add it to the Discovering Buddhism Material page website.
All right.
Where we have other things. But okay. Brian does do that from time to time, adds things. So you can always kind of go to the recordings and look for cool stuff.
And see, this is so cool because when we used to do Discovering Buddhism in the basement, it was me trying to open the door and there was nobody helping. Are you kidding me? So this is like really nice. So we're going to end, but next week we'll go over this a little bit because it's on the list of things I'm supposed to cover. gotta make sure I cover it. And you could ask Geshe-la to teach a whole week on this, and you'd still not get done. But I can give you the quick version. And any questions that you want to make sure that I come back with answers, or if there's anything that we cover that you're like, I'd really like to go into more depth with that, then please let me know and I'll set up a time for you to talk to Geshe-la. So we're going to meet 6:30 next week here. I'm not going to keep you super late because we're all tired. And we're going to do a lot. We're going to jam a lot into a little bit of time because we're going to do some prostrations. Or those of you who are not physically doing them, you're going to read the 35 Buddhas to us as we do prostrations. And if you have some offering that you'd like to bring for the altar, you know, it could be like a nice, clear, like new water, not one that's half drunk, but some water, a candle, flowers, whatever that you would like to make an offering, and then I'll get your head ready for that, okay? It'll be powerful. And so also the homework is, did you all do the homework last time of making mental offerings out in the world? Okay, keep on doing that because we're going to talk about that next time. All right, so let's dedicate now. So now what we do is think about, we've been talking about karma and thinking about these seeds, and you are creating habits and tendencies just by questioning your behavior, trying to expand your options, looking at your view. This is huge. Whether you came from next door or came from Ohio, you have just created a pocket full of positive karmic seeds. And now you take a moment to dedicate them so that they ripen in the right direction. You're just deciding how you want to deposit these. And I would suggest that you dedicate them that the obstacles between you and your complete enlightenment are eliminated, that you're able to tame your mind, increase your wisdom to the utmost, completely enlightened state, that you develop pure bodhicitta, so that the two wings of wisdom and compassion are fully developed and you reach complete enlightenment so that you're able to help all other beings find the right path to that state as well.
And now we're going to read Shanti Davis' prayer on page
246.
And think for a minute, like, about something that something in the world or something in your life that really does tug at your heart, so that you can think of something really meaningful to you as we say these prayers. Think of people that you know, people you don't know, people in all parts of the world suffering all kinds of things, human beings, animal beings, beings we can't see. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Thank you, everyone. And Jennifer, we are going to be looking for you. You can be right up there. We're going to be waving to you, okay? Okay, everyone. Good night. Thank you.